This custody hearing regarding Sabrina Spellman will come to order.
But I'm already in custody. My parents turned my witch training over to my two aunts, and I live with them.
But your aunts are kaput.
The witch's council insists you reside in only one household.
Why?
Check Article 12, Section 15.
Because you say so?
Now, you have to choose which aunt you wish to live with. This choice will affect the rest of your life, so choose wisely. Okay, who's it gonna be?
You want me to decide now?
You've lived with them for over a year. You must have a favorite by now. So spill it. I got a squash game.
I don't have a favorite. I love them both.
This is a court of law. This is not a greeting card company. We'll reconvene later for your decision.
Ladies, gentlemen, Tootie, welcome to episode number 48 of Sabrina's Witch Trials. This is, of course, the podcast where each episode we rewatch, review, and reminisce all about everyone's favorite Friday Night Spellfest, Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I'm Alex Adouju, and folks, on this episode, we are going to be covering quite the family quarrel, and I don't just mean with the guest on the show this episode. No, we'll be talking about what happens when Hilda and Zelda take a little time apart, of course, caused by that terrible bitch Sabrina. It's episode 48, Sabrina's Choice, and on this episode, I've brought in my, always my first choice for a guest who doesn't have a huge rider, unlike that other guest. Here he is, the one, the only, Phil Adouju is here. Phil, welcome back.
Hey, what's going on, Al?
Nothing much. I say welcome back not only to the show, but also from 5 minutes ago when we recorded this intro the first time, and I noticed that it was only recording my end because getting back into this, doing this consistently again, it will be a bit of knocking off the rust.
We all know I am the first choice after Chris.
Listen, I can't be buying those M&Ms and just sorting out the green ones like Chris demands every episode.
I know. She always wants her sparkling water at a certain temperature as well.
Oh my God, 98 degrees because she loves what's-his-face so much.
Lachey.
What a terrible... Also, if she's drinking that sparkling water at 98 degrees, that's a gross drink.
Ugh. Oh gosh, that sounds terrible.
Tepid body water seltzer, thank you.
Yes, I want it, you know, lukewarm. Mm.
That's why I don't have her on the show anymore. Now, we'll get her back soon. But, of course, always happy to have Phil here on the show. Phil, I hope you're doing well. Your weekend, we're recording this on Friday, so your weekend's just getting ready to kick off.
Yeah, my week's gone pretty well. I've been on vacation this week, so that kind of helps.
Absolutely.
It was a use it or lose it situation, so I decided to use the vacation instead of lose said vacation. So.
That's good. Use it or lose it, I think use it is always the way to go.
But for the most part, everything's good. Can't complain.
That's fantastic. As I said, Phil, episode 48 here on the Witch Trials, Sabrina's Choice, first aired May 1st, first day of May, May Day, 1998, written by Sheldon Bull, who's written a lot of episodes of Sabrina. Now, you know, Phil, I do like to ask, before we get into the episode, a bit of trivia about 1998 and May 1st specifically.
Ooh.
Would you have any guess as to what the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 was?
Oh, see, that's a great question. So, 98.
Mm-hmm. Getting into summer?
Getting into summer, and I would say 98's about the rise of the boy bands, so it's got to be like something from Backstreet Boys, I would imagine.
Ooh, not this time, but I will say it is a male group.
Okay.
And it's an R&B song.
Ooh, is it Boyz II Men?
It is not Boyz II Men.
Is it Casey and JoJo?
No, we've already had Casey and JoJo
on this series before. I know, so I was like, oh, maybe it just kept going.
But I will say it's probably the best song written about wondering if a girl can feel your erection.
Ooh.
It's Too Close by Next, Phil. What a great song. Feel a little poke coming through on you.
I thought you were going to go with Genuine Pony.
That's good, too. That is good, too. Yeah. They're really battling it out for the best sex R&B song.
Sex R&B song.
But yes, episode 48, as I said, first aired May 1998. Phil, you know I like to ask you to describe this episode in a set number of words.
Oh, of course I do.
Of course you do. And you've got you've got literally pages in front of you of every possible number from 1 to 964. So I must ask you to describe it in 965. No. Let's do 11 words, Phil.
Yes, I do have 11.
Perfect.
Sabrina learns she needs to have both aunts in her life.
That is very good.
Yeah, that's what I came up with 11.
I mean, succinct, full sentence, which I always appreciate on the show.
Mm-hmm.
A quality description, and boy, does she learn that lesson through the help of drag queens and baldness. Let's get into it, Phil. The story of this episode is a pretty simple one, honestly, and it focuses on Sabrina and her aunts having a bit of a tiff. This begins when Sabrina wants to play the aunts against each other. This starts when she gets invited to a Lisa Loeb concert, because it is 1998, from Harvey. He won some tickets.
I was the 23rd caller to the radio station, and I won 2 tickets to the Lisa Loeb concert this weekend.
You're kidding! I've devoted my life to being the 23rd caller. But I'm a purist. I never use speed dial.
She immediately knows that she will not be going to this concert because she promised her aunties that she would stay home and finish schoolwork that she has to catch up on because she's been going out a lot recently. Harvey asks her to ask Zelda, and it basically goes as she would expect.
And didn't you say you had a lot of work to do?
You're paraphrasing, but yes.
And didn't you promise not to even ask permission to go somewhere?
That Aunt Hilda's a real pain, huh?
Zelda at this time is also very irritated with Hilda, as Hilda keeps leaving her stuff, like plates and brassieres, around the house. Quite the slob she is. After Sabrina gets the bad news from Zelda, she complains to Salem, who suggests that she try another aunt, eventually asking Hilda, who is more concerned about finding her new shoes, only to assume that neat freak Zelda has moved them. As always, that's what she's doing. She's always moving her damn stuff.
Zelda! She's a compulsive neat freak. Back during the plague, she used to get upset if people didn't leave their dead in neat, tidy rows.
Once Sabrina tells Hilda about the concert, she's super into it, and she also goes on to ask Sabrina if she asked Zelda, who definitely didn't say no. Sabrina wasn't no, but there's no way she said no specifically. N-O, didn't say it.
I'll bet she said no.
No, she did not say no.
So Hilda tells her to have a great time and bring her a t-shirt. I would love to see what a 1998 Lisa Loeb concert t-shirt looks like. We then get a shot of Sabrina partying with Harvey at the concert, and when she zaps herself into her bedroom later that night, I added here, cleverly, Zelda immediately pops in to yell at her with the aid of some lightning.
Sabrina, still up? I'll take that as a yes.
While yelling at Sabrina, Zelda says that she went around her back to her irresponsible sister, which starts a big argument between the aunties, which nearly lets Sabrina sneak out of the room, only to get stopped at the last minute.
If you weren't such a stick in the mud, she wouldn't have had to come to me.
If I'm stuck in the mud, it's because of the mess you make. Door!
Thanks, I was just gonna get that.
So Phil here, this first scene, set of scenes, I should say, all focused around Sabrina working the aunties against each other. Mm-hmm. But of course, before we get into the scene and the scenes here within, we must travel to our favorite section of the house, that being Phil's fashion corner or costume corner. I forget which one I call it. Yeah, it's as appropriate.
We're going to go with costume corner, I would imagine.
Phil's costume corner is what we're doing here, folks.
The opening.
Phil, fill us in.
So, as we all know, this is one of my favorite things to look at. So, you know, we kind of go into the credits, and we see her dressed as what, Al? Do you know?
Oh, boy, do I. She's dressed as a horse jockey.
She is. And she has the clever line of saying, giddy up, and goes, wait, I need a horse.
Yeah.
Giddy up.
Oh, I need a horse.
Again, why? Why does this always happen to us?
Real bad. I mean, look, the jockey costume already. Are you running low on ideas?
Like, out of all the things that you can, like, do, like, a prince, like, you know, there's so many different things you could do. Like, a waitress. I don't know. A gazillion mm-hmm. different things. A policewoman.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Peanut.
Mr. Peanut. Like, hey, you know, with the top hat.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
You could dress as the Vlasic Pickle Bird. I just wanted to do all food mascots. Related.
The Oscar Mayer Wiener.
That'd be good.
Whatever.
Mr. Clean. She could be Mr. Clean.
But yeah, like a jockey. Like, what I was kind of thinking is in May, or, you know, late April, early May, is usually the running of, you know, the Preakness, the horse races. So mm-hmm. that's maybe what it was probably going towards.
Sure, and you know how much teenage girls love horse racing.
Well, you know, we'll kind of talk about a couple of different references later on about, yeah. you know. But still, like, I think that was them, like, really, and that's if I'm really reaching and trying to throw them a lifeline here.
In reality, they were just, like, in the ABC wardrobe room, and we were like, all right, well, there's a jockey costume. Do you have any good jokes for that? No. All right, we'll do it anyway. It's fine.
The only thing I could think of is, like, they ordered, like, from cast services, like, hello, yes, we need a hockey costume. And they brought him a jockey costume. And they're like, oh, no, what do we do now? Just roll with it.
Also, I've written, also, just a terrible line, but, like, I've written what they should have said was, this show will win and place.
Ah, see, that was... As bad as that is, it's yeah. still better than what they said.
It's at least attempting to be clever. Not, where's my horse?
Or something like, you know, I always come in first. That's or right. something like that. You know, there you go. Perfect. Great.
No need
Move
to
on.
Jockey for room on the couch.
Horrible puns everywhere.
We're good at them.
Had.
We are good at them. Phil, did you know that Sabrina is a purist and never uses speed dial?
Oh my god, that was one of my favorite lines of the whole thing. Like,
really?
It really was. Because it's like, you're sitting there and go, why would you write that in? Like, it's the most absurd thing that you could write. But
also, doesn't use speed dial. Sure uses a lot of magic to her benefit, though.
Yeah, like, what? Exactly. If you wanted to go to a Lisa Loeb concert, again, wouldn't you just use magic to get into the Lisa Loeb concert?
Yes.
Or just bring Lisa Loeb into your, like, living room and, like, sing, bitch, sing.
Like 10,000 Maniacs.
Yeah, like, oh, bing, oh, here she is. Oh, okay. Where the hell am I? Oh, just sing the song. Okay.
Sing your song, dummy.
Yeah. Perform, monkey, perform.
Also, you could have probably just walked up to the arena on the day and been like, can I have a ticket? And they're like, yeah, we got plenty of them, because it's Lisa Loeb.
Lisa Loeb in the 90s, Al.
That's
not
right.
Lisa Loeb in the 2021,
also,
you know.
In case you're wondering, Phil, what would you say Lisa Loeb's biggest song is?
Her biggest song?
Yeah, her most famous.
Oh, God. I would say Stay.
Yes, I would also say Stay. That song was 4 years old at this point.
Yeah. Stay would probably be her biggest song. But do you know what song they actually were singing?
No, I did not. Is it the wake-up song?
No, it is not the wake-up song.
What is it, Phil?
It's I Do.
I see. I'm not gonna lie. My Lisa Loeb knowledge here is one song. and here's the thing: I make fun of them going to a Lisa Loeb concert when I, in August, will be going to an Alanis Morissette concert in 2021.
Opened up by Lisa Loeb.
No, it's actually the opening. So we're going to the one in Jones Beach in Long Island, and the billing says, Alanis Morissette with special guest Garbage, and I was like, I turned to Lee and I was like, but enough about the people from Long Island. Got 'em.
Wow. Ow.
Swish.
It's
nah.
not Jersey people.
That's true. Oh. That's true. They're both, I mean, it's close enough, though.
I mean, come on, the island? Half of New York is kind of on the island.
Sure,
technically.
But we're in the good half.
It's okay. Yeah, Brooklyn.
Phil will not go with me on this one.
I mean, it's not the worst thing you've said.
But yeah, so would you have been excited to go to a Lisa Loeb concert in 1998 if you were Harvey?
Probably not, no. I mean, it would have been exciting to go for free.
Yes.
But not like if I had to pay for it.
Right. I can see Sabrina being excited because she does feel more like woman focused.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's not the greatest thing, I guess.
It is honestly, in some ways, a very realistic representation of concert tickets you would win from a radio station.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, oh, front row seats, Lisa Loeb.
It's like, it's not great, but I'll take it. Phil, Sabrina isn't allowed to go because she went to a bad movie and a 99 cent store with Valerie the previous weekend.
That is about the most 90s thing I've ever heard in my life.
I actually wrote, that honestly sounds like a very nice weekend.
That literally sounds like every weekend for me in the 90s.
You did. You were good friends with the guy who ran our 99 cent store.
I mean, good friend is an over-exaggeration.
He gave you a watch for your birthday one day.
Okay, he gave me a 99-cent store watch for my birthday once, and that is a true story.
Did it have the number 12 on it twice? Maybe. Who knows?
It did flash 12, and then worked for about a week, and then didn't work again.
Which, honestly, for a dollar, not bad. Phil, what'd you have in this grouping of scenes here?
So in the beginning, we were talking about when they opened the opening, we have an issue. We have Mr. Kraft.
Mm-hmm.
She bumps into Mr. Kraft, and then he talks about buying minoxidil out of someone's trunk.
All right, that's the last time I buy minoxidil out of somebody's trunk.
So we find out that, you know, Mr. Kraft is buying narcotics out of the back of people's cars.
Martin Mull's secret drug addict.
But he does find that he has a problem and he needs to stop because now he's starting to hallucinate from it.
Right. There's no real B story this episode, but the B story is just Mr. Kraft going, huh?
It's just like the B story of this whole episode is like Mr. Kraft just showing up all over, like in the Sabrina like world,
right?
Like in everything. Like the only place he wasn't in was like the other realm.
Yeah,
the other realm. I'm like, why is he, like, what principal is, or vice principal at that, is going to, like, the kid's house? Like, this one specific kid's house.
I mean, he does date Hilda on and off, but, like, it's been a while.
I mean, you know, it's getting very stalkerishy to me. Yes. Like, it's like, come on, like, let her be.
Did you like Salem's line about sleeping in a wicker basket next to some paint cans?
About the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, I feel sorry for you tonight when I'm sleeping in my wicker basket by those old paint cans.
It's very funny.
As he was saying, I literally heard the tiny violins playing in my head.
It is a real check your privilege moment for Sabrina there. And it's like, oh no, I have magic and I'm a young, healthy teenager. Well, I'm going to go shit in a box. yeah. See you later.
Yeah. Oh, my life is so bad. I can't go to the concert with my boyfriend. Well, I'm going to go sleep in that basket over there. So have a great day. Enjoy yourself.
Mm. Let's talk about the concert scene for a second, Phil. I hated the fact that Harvey, while being like front row in Lisa Loeb concerts, turns to Sabrina to ask if she can hear. Of course she can hear. Lisa Loeb is right there.
So the other thing, like, before we kind of get into that real quick.
Yes.
I forgot to tell you one of the things before we go any further.
Mm.
Like when he tells her that, you know, he won the concert tickets and he's like, yeah, the seats are right next to the speakers. And she goes, oh, man, that's where the fights break out. And I'm like, what fight is breaking out at a Lisa Loeb concert?
Hey, you're wearing the same denim skirt as me.
I mean, what is it like? Oh, no, tortoiseshell frames are my favorite, not the black ones. Like, come on.
She wrote this song based on my experiences, damn it, not yours.
Oh, gosh. Like when I heard that, like, fights breaking out at a Lisa Loeb concert,
That's my granola bar. Put it down.
It's like getting cut in line at the Whole Foods. Like, come on, like, really?
Honestly, she is the Trader Joe's of musical performers.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, that's literally, I'm pretty sure I've been to a Trader Joe's and I've heard Lisa Loeb playing at Trader Joe's.
Half of the people working there look like her too, yeah.
Pretty much. I mean, if it's, I mean, literally, if you've ever been in the Pacific Northwest, that's literally all it is Lisa Loeb people.
We are really doing a lot of Lisa Loeb humor on this episode, and I'm here for it.
Hey, all I know is I love Lisa Loeb. I think she's amazing. I mean, have you seen her recently? She literally looks like... like she hasn't aged a day.
She is in that Geico ad now, and yeah, she looks absolutely fantastic to be over 50.
Like, actually, I think she looks better now than she did back then.
She kind of does, yeah.
Like, she looked a little more mousy back then. Now she looks a little bit more like, she looks really good. Glamorous, that's the word. Yeah, say it, Al.
Glamorous. Glamorous Lisa Loeb.
But yeah, to go back to what you were saying. So, you know, they're at the concert, and then like she says that she only brought a dollar with her?
Yep.
Like, what the hell is that? This is, like, I mean, I don't understand it's the 90s and a dollar bought you a lot of shit, but you go to a concert with a dude who just got you in for free and you bring $1 with you?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, come on.
The wrong thing to do.
Yeah, like, you know, if someone took me to a concert, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, they brought me to a concert. I got to buy them a drink or something, you know? I'm actually going to bring $1 with me.
Not Sabrina. She's
plus that's poorly planned. What if like you and Harvey get into a fight and he just leaves your ass there?
That is true. Like,
what the hell are you going to do then?
I think it was an episode of Reba I once saw when Reba was going out on a date after having been divorced. That's how a series starts. And her daughter is like, "All right, you're going on a date, so you have to have cash, Gatorade, and a spare pair of underwear in your bag." And she was like, "Why?" And it's like, "Well, it's cash if you need to get home from somewhere you don't know where you are, a Gatorade for hydration, and underwear in case, you know, whatever, wink wink." And that's what I assume every woman has in her bag at all times, because you never know when a date's gonna break out. Just little bottles of Gatorade.
Ah, that's right, you gotta stay hydrated.
That's why whenever I go through Leah's bag, I'm like, "Where the hell's the Gatorade? I'm thirsty." Phil, one last thing. I did like that for once in her goddamn life, Sabrina actually uses magic somewhat cleverly and zaps herself directly into her room.
I know. It's amazing. Like she actually thought of like, I have this magical power. Let me use it for something that I can would advance myself in life.
Yeah. Doesn't do it the second time when it would have actually helped. But, you know.
Again, it's Sabrina.
She's not that smart.
No, she's not. I don't know how she makes it. I mean, I don't know how she makes it to school every day.
Obviously not through magic, because that would be too simple.
Oh, a lot of Lisa Loeb love and Sabrina hate going on today, boys and girls.
Well, we've got a description for this episode. Phil, the story about Sabrina playing the aunties against each other nearly repeats itself a second time when Gordy, big man on campus Gordy, ends a meeting of the science club to invite people to his house as his parents are away, leading to the entire school being invited to a house party at big old Gordo's.
My parents are going away for the weekend, and, you know, we have that big screen TV and the indoor pool.
Empty house party!
Everyone will be there. Everyone, except Sabrina, apparently. She first tries to convince Hilda, who tells her to fuck off, adding that hopefully she gains the clarity to understand that this is not one of the things that she can change. Later on, after the threat of Harvey and Libby being alone together at the party, Sabrina tries asking Zelda, and while she's distracted by some scientific stuff, Sabrina approaches it from the lens of a meeting of the science club, and after she tells Zelda that Hilda doesn't really understand that whole thing, they both just have a nice laugh together about how big a dummy Hilda is.
I love the science club. I wish your Aunt Hilda had more science. I think it makes a person organized.
Well, I tried to talk to her about this, but
she grew distracted by something shiny.
That's a good one, Aunt Zelda. You're pretty funny.
Zelda eventually tells her to go and to be the brightest one at the science club meeting. Sabrina goes to the party at Gordy's and I've written here, poorly headbangs with Harvey.
Yeah, that was pretty horrible.
Though that night, as she tries sneaking into the house through the front door, like an idiot, Hilda and Zelda are there waiting for her, like two scorned wives. Just sitting in the dark waiting for their cheating husbands to come home.
Hello, Sabrina.
She tries to apologize, but they tell her that there's only one thing that they can do now, and they zap in a duffel bag.
What are you going to do to me?
Under the circumstances,
the only thing we can do. You're throwing me out?
No, I'm moving out.
It's Hilda who's leaving, as the past few instances have proven that they're not good parents together, and seeing as they disagree about just about everything, they'll probably be better apart.
You're just one of a multitude of things we disagree on.
I've already picked out a lovely townhouse.
I love townhouses. See? We even disagree on that?
Sabrina is in shock, but that shock quickly dissipates once Zelda yells at her about tricking her. Then we get Sabrina going to Hilda's townhouse, which is a mirror reflection of the auntie's Victorian house, with the addition of a very hideous doily.
I hate it.
Sabrina is shown to her new room, which is obviously her old room in reverse, and Quizmaster's waiting there, but less to meet Sabrina and more to use Hilda's shower. And apparently her razor.
Mind if I use your shower?
Go ahead. Just don't use my razor again.
Hilda tells her that she's having a party later for a housewarming and makes a list of things she needs, including guests. And once she leaves, Salem just tells her to add the quinine water. Because Salem is 800 years old, apparently. Salem then complains to Sabrina about the two homes, eventually crying about how he's now a latchkey kitty.
I'm a latchkey kitty.
The next day at Westbridge, Sabrina finds Quizmaster in her locker, and he tells her that the Witches' Council has called her before them. And while Mr. Kraft is watching down the hall, Sabrina disappears, leaving him befuddled, all the more so when the note that she was handed also just crumples like up into paper, into like a paper ball, and then disappears in front of his eyes. So he's going to kill himself because he thinks he's going insane.
My ex-wife is behind this. I just know it. Magic.
Phil.
Yes.
Speaking of that magic.
Magic.
Let's talk about the late revelation that Gordy's family is fucking rich.
I know. Like, all of a sudden, like, we find out, like, he's got this indoor pool.
Indoor pool.
And a big screen TV. In the 90s.
Exactly. That is the point here.
Like now, like you can get a big screen TV for like nothing.
$200 will get you a big screen TV.
Yeah. Like in the 90s, like it was like, I don't know, like $3,000 or $4,000 for a really big TV.
Like the fact that anyone had anything bigger than a 19-inch TV in the 90s is ridiculous to me.
Well, yeah, because that's all we had, Al.
That's what we had.
That's how we lived life.
And we loved that RCA. Oh, boy.
Yep.
Remember that one time that the Dreamcast was plugged into the front of it and Chris woke up in the morning and didn't know and just knocked the TV down?
Yep. True story.
And then there was a big purple spot on the TV until we replaced it.
That is so true.
Memories.
Mom was so pissed.
Dude, I was asleep and I just hear like the fucking earth shattering. And I'm like, what the fuck happened? And I'm surprised the glass didn't break, honestly.
Dude, those things were built like tanks. the thing literally fell like 6 feet onto the ground,
mm-hmm.
and like, but there was like this ominous purple hue to it for its life.
Something has happened here.
it's like you know when you have like an old like high school injury, and it's like, oh, I'll remember this forever, and it was just That's there right. forever.
When, when it would get cold, the TV would just get slightly more purple. But yeah, like, indoor pool. Like, I don't care if he's in the science club. He's going to be the most popular kid in school.
Look, dude, if you don't understand how much a pool costs, like, to put in, an indoor pool is way more expensive. Oh, like, it is so expensive.
Dude, me and Leah went to a wedding in December in Florida, and our Airbnb had, it wasn't an indoor pool, but it was a pool that had, like a full, like, birdcage around it.
Yeah.
I have never felt more like a rich man in my life. I get to sit by a pool and there's no bugs. What the fuck? And it's in the ground.
We gotta put in Rich Girl by Hall & Oates right here.
You got it. This is what was going through my head when I was sitting by the pool.
So you, like you said, Gordy was, you know, Gordy invited everybody to his, you know, baller digs that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, you know, Sabrina's like, well, shit, I don't want to be left out. Like, I got to figure out like how I'm going to get over here like usual. So, you know, again, she tries to pit the aunts together, or against each other. But when she asks Hilda, as she's coming in, she has the bag of groceries, Al. Mm-hmm. Did you notice this?
I did not notice this bag of groceries, no.
So you got go back and look at it. It's freaking hilarious. Because she has this bag of groceries she's coming in with. Mm-hmm. And she grabs one thing out of there, out of the bag, and throws it into the fridge. And then takes the entire rest of the bag of groceries and just shoves it into the fridge.
That's pretty funny.
I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, this is the worst
thing. I'm starting to see why Zelda hates her.
I'm like, you know what? I understand now Zelda's hatred. Because I'm sitting there going, who the hell puts away groceries like this? Just like shoves an entire paper.
She puts
paper
a loaf of bread in. And then, yeah, there goes the whole bag.
The whole freaking bag just like shoved in there.
And the best thing is she's still only opening the door a crack. Like she doesn't want to see Sabrina. She doesn't want Sabrina to see her doing this.
Yeah, like, don't tell your aunt. Entire bag of groceries.
That's one of the best things.
I was just like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
In my head, that's how Caroline Ray has always put away groceries, and she didn't know it was a weird thing.
It's almost like, you know, we need you to play up that you're a complete slob for the storyline. And like, okay. And just like, crush it in there.
She's just like, how do you guys remember when you bought your groceries if you don't keep them all together in a bag in the fridge?
Yeah, like that way you know they were all bought on the same day.
Yeah. Maniacs.
But yeah, that was one of the things I had written down for this segment or for that section there. I was like, oh my God. Like, I cannot believe this is the way you put away groceries.
Did you like, when they're walking through the hallway, did you like Harvey's very orange shirt with like a tribally white print in the front?
I thought it was about the most 90s thing that I've ever seen. So yes.
It was. I've literally written, it's not 90s hideous, but it's just like a bad color for him.
Yeah, it's probably not for him, but it's definitely something of that time period.
This is one of those things you would find for like $90 at a Brooklyn thrift store now, though.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They have really settled in for his like costuming on like brightly colored resort shirt with like white or black t-shirt underneath.
Does he still have like the earrings in?
He does have earrings in this scene. Yeah, yeah. I noticed that. Yeah. He's got one in each ear, I think.
Yeah, I kind of saw that too, and I was like,
and like the,
I still got his earrings.
Not in the lobe, but like on the top of the ear.
Yeah, which is like even weirder. Like,
he's hardcore, I feel.
I mean, he says no to the lobe.
That's right. Unless it's Lisa Loeb.
Unless he's going to the concert.
That's right. That's where he got him done. He's like, I'll get these piercings. I mean, at a Lisa Loeb concert, of course they'll do it in the lobe. Ow, fuck. Top of the ear. Anyway, Phil, do you remember New Year's 1999 as Libby brings up?
It's just a dumb party, Brett. And New Year's Eve 1999 will be just another night of hats and horns.
Oh, God, that's great. That's a great question. You know what's funny? It's funny that you say that because as I was watching it, I'm trying to sit there and think, like, do I remember 1999 New Year's Eve? I mean,
I actually do remember watching the ball drop and it going into the year 2000.
Yeah, because we were waiting for Y2K to happen. That's what exactly. We were waiting for, like everything to like everything to go like shut down, like. We were waiting for the ball to drop and like it just go like pew.
Yeah. Like I remember when it didn't happen. Like I think the Cassises were over our house hanging out with us that night. And I remember I was seven or eight. I remember jumping at Steph and like hugging her because shit didn't shut down.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember like, I mean, I remember like certain things. I don't remember like the actual day. I mean, so happens when you get old, like me, you don't remember shit. I do remember watching, like, ABC had, like, this special.
Yep.
Like, they went through every time zone. And I was watching that for the day. But I figured once, like, shit didn't, like, fall apart in Japan, that we were probably going to be okay.
Let's see if I can find a clip from that ABC special.
I'm pretty sure you can. I mean, it was pretty popular.
And those fireworks are in Sydney Harbour, Australia, beneath the Sydney Harbour Bridge, as Australia gets ready to celebrate the new millennium.
It's crazy that, like, one, that a kid born in 1999 is now 21. Or 22, even.
Don't remind me.
But, like, that's just not a bit of knowledge that a lot of, like, even high school kids would, like, understand. Think to try to explain Y2K to a high school kid and be like, we were all afraid that computers were going to shut down because the calendars didn't go back, didn't have four numbers. It only had two numbers because computers had only been invented like 30 years prior.
I mean, they would probably be like, "Why? What? Can you just like put that like on Instagram and like it could save the world?" Like, no, idiot.
Couldn't you just update through the Play Store and then do a TikTok dance? No.
No, dummy. TikTok wasn't invented yet. It's like, I mean, it's like when you explain like to like, you know, I have nieces and nephews, you know, that are younger. Mm-hmm. And, like, you explain to them, like, phones, like, having to be in the house and, like, in a cord. They're like, look at you like you're an idiot. Like, oh, okay. Okay, okay, dumb. And it's probably the way we looked at, like, at our ancestors back in the day. They're like, oh, we had to, like, walk. They're like, oh, okay, grandpa, had to walk.
Yeah, like, imagine, like, in, like a 60-year-old looking at a VCR in the 90s. They would have been blown away, too.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, just fucking rewind it, grandpa. Just put it in the rewinder. That's what it's there for. Be kind and rewind, people. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, right now, if you tell somebody, like, oh, like, we have to go to, like, a Blockbuster or a, you know, a rentals, mm-hmm. they look at you like you're an idiot. Like, so you had to leave your house to watch a movie and rent a movie? Like, yes. This is how.
Do you have to pay for each individual movie and bring it back?
I know. I mean, and that's what people look at you like, you know, especially, like, that young, like, when they're, you know, 9, 10 years old, they look at you like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, like, me and Leah just went back to her family's house for the weekend because it was Memorial Day and everything. And we were just driving through the town, and she's like, oh, yeah, we went to go pick up food or something. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's where the Hollywood Video used to be, and like, knocked my hair back.
Yeah, Hollywood Video. Nice. Whew. You know what? At least you know that you're not dating someone that young that'd be like, they wouldn't know what that's talking about. Like, what?
That's how you can tell I'm not a pedophile.
Yeah, exactly.
Because my girlfriend knows what a Hollywood Video is.
Al has passed the non-pedophile. Yes, they know what a video store was.
That's right.
But yeah, like, it's amazing that, you know, that some people just don't know. Like, they're like, it's like, okay. Yeah.
Phil,
yeah.
The speech from Zelda to Sabrina about women in science, like, is it just me or was that like the saddest thing ever? Because it's just like, it's designed to make Sabrina feel a little guilty, but it's just like, God, Sabrina, she's being so supportive of you here.
Okay, well, see, this Saturday, Science Club is having a special
meeting?
Yes. People will be meeting.
Well, you go then. Women in science, Sabrina. That's the future.
No, she doesn't care. Like, if I mean, yes, it was sad. Like, you know, you're like, you could tell that Zelda's like, you know, it's very important that women in, you know, are in science and that, you know,
better yourself.
That you're bettering the human cause and and she's just like, okay. Like, you know, she doesn't know. She doesn't give two
all
shits.
All right, I'm going to go do jello shots at Gordy's pool. Bye.
Exactly. All right, see you later, idiot. You know, like.
She doesn't actively call her an idiot.
But you knew that's what she was trying to go for.
That's right. She was dusting her hands going, I showed that mark.
Yeah. Nice job, stupid. But, I mean, I'm sitting there like, are you kidding me? Like, exactly. Like, that. You kind of nailed it with that description. It was almost like. Like, you're sitting there and you're, you know, she's trying to teach her a life lesson, and in usual Sabrina fashion, it's just like,
ignores it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go to the pool. I mean, study hall. Okay.
You go, and you be the brightest one there.
Okay.
the one other good thing I thought about the scene was that, like, this story doesn't feel like it totally comes out of left field either, because, like, the aunties have been shown to, like, be adversarial with each other and, like, have issues living around each other at times.
Yeah.
Like, they literally had to go to that spa that time because they were fighting so much, the most since they were on opposite sides in the Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, it's... the storyline isn't out of left field. I mean, it's something that could happen, you know, and I'm pretty sure most people have had this... You know, I've done that with their parents, have, you know, pit them up against each other. So I think for the storyline of trying to, you know, it being, you know, applicable to the current storyline and being applicable to a child, is completely, I mean, there's a lot more far-fetched crap that they've been trying to throw down our throats.
Oh, definitely. Like Sabrina getting a magical bank loan or some shit. I don't know.
Sabrina getting her witch's license. It's like, oh, okay. Like
Sabrina buying a talking car.
Yeah, Sabrina trying to get her witch's license for the last 24 episodes. Like,
still not doing a great job,
Sabrina. Like, what are you waiting on?
She'll get there.
Come on. Permit only lasts so long.
Don't I know?
Come on. Hint, hint.
magic, Sabrina. Yeah. Wink.
Yeah.
I can't be doing all the magic here.
This has nothing to do with you, Al. Just Sabrina.
No. Absolutely not. No. What would you be talking about? I need to get a license.
How about Salem saying that he's a latchkey kitty?
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. That broke my heart a little bit.
He has a lot of good lines this episode, honestly.
He does. Like, they're really stepping up the Salem game.
We haven't reached the Salem Says favorite line of the episode for me yet, but we'll get there soon enough.
Ooh, okay.
Anyway, arriving at the Witches' Council, Phil, Sabrina is told that this is a custody hearing, and while she does reside with her aunties, now that they're split up, she has to decide which one she wants to live with forever. This is as a result of Article 12, Section 5.
Because you say so?
They tell her how important a decision it is before the judge rushes her to make a decision. They tell her to pick her favorite, but she says that she loves them both, and the judge puts the whole proceeding into recess to give her some time to make her decision, and so that he and the quizmaster can apparently go play a squash game.
Ready? You're going down.
Come on now. Oh, that's it? No help? I hope you both get squash elbow.
The quizmaster was wearing very sporty garb this whole time, but the judge does come around from his podium or whatever to reveal that he's wearing very short shorts. We then get a montage of Sabrina spending time with the aunties one-on-one, doing sciencey stuff with Zelda, including making fireworks, enjoying a nice dinner, and reading while a piano player is playing in the background, when she's with Hilda, she's shown eating corn dogs, watching jugglers, sliding down a slide that's for some reason placed on the steps leading directly to the front door, which just sounds like a Buster Keaton routine waiting to happen. And she also swings on a giant rope in the living room.
Like Tarzan.
All this leads to Sabrina being incredibly indecisive about which one to live with. So the judge grants her a what-if spell, which, while it doesn't really seem like it needs an explanation, Sabrina asks for one.
What's a what-if?
It allows you to look into the future and see what might happen if, say, you never brushed your teeth. Or if dogs took shorthand.
And for some reason, Sabrina utilizes this powerful magic to find out what would happen if Kenan and Kel won the lottery.
God.
And we then get a cutaway to Kenan and Kel cameoing on the show, wherein Kenan Thompson has a winning lottery ticket and puts it down on a half-made sandwich, only to have Kel Mitchell make his sandwich and then eat it before wondering why Kenan is crying like a baby.
What are you doing? I got hungry. Keep looking.
We're then shown Sabrina's Hilda future, which is probably more pertinent to the point, in which she's in a very messy house. She's riding a bicycle around the living room for some reason, only to have porn star businessman Harvey Kinkle walk in, wondering where she's been as they were supposed to get married.
Oh, that's right. We're supposed to get married, right?
I figured you forgot.
No. You gave me a license to sign. It's around here somewhere. Oh, here it is. Sorry about the gum. It's not too late, is it?
Yeah. I gave you that 3 years ago.
He basically takes this opportunity to tell Sabrina, that he has moved on and found a new wife. The wife is, of course, Libby Chesler, who brings in another little bundle of surprisement, that being Jenilee Green wearing a baby body in a stroller, and she squirts milk in Sabrina's face. When Sabrina sees what living with Zelda would be like, she first sees the benefits, that being her scientific skills being used to make Libby grovel for some anti-aging cream.
What do you say?
Sabrina's the best. I'm a freak.
Mr. Kraft then comes in for some anti-aging cream, though he's looking quite haggard.
Thanks so much for letting me be a part of your experiment. Now, you be honest with me now. I'm in the placebo group, aren't I?
Not necessarily. You could be part of Group C. They're getting aging cream.
Why does anyone need aging cream, Sabrina? What the hell? What is the point of that? Is it for babies?
So you can get some, legal beer?
Maybe that. I was going to say it literally sounds like something like creepy older guys would give to like 17-year-old girls to be like, just put a little aging cream on and then we can get a little relationship going.
Oh, God.
Anyway, Mr. Kraft then leaves, thanking Sabrina for complimenting his new shoes, which she did not do because he can't hear anymore. And when Sabrina finds out that Harvey's still in her life, super excited for this, that is until she finds out that Harvey is now some sort of ghostly head in a jar. She says that she promises to figure out why his body dissolved, that is, after her 49 other experiments that she has to do.
You know, as soon as I finish these next 49 experiments, I'm going to find out not just how, but why you dissolved.
Maybe move that one to the head of the, docket.
Mm-hmm.
He does ask to be let out of the anti-aging test because he's concerned that it's actually keeping him alive and he'd much rather be dead. Phil.
Yes, sir.
So, all this Witch's Council business.
Yes.
It was funny to me that the Witch's Council was just pretty comfortable zapping someone in magically in front of a hallway full of mortals.
Sure.
Not to mention the whole magic paper thing. You guys are really not protecting the secret of witches.
Well, luckily, it's only Mr. Kraft, and he's,
gullible.
Yeah, he's a gullible idiot, and half the time he thinks it's his ex-wife doing it to him, so.
We will see his ex-wife in Season 3, Phil.
Oh, can't wait.
And maybe she's a witch.
No.
Yes.
Now that answers a lot of questions.
And maybe Jerry Springer is involved in that episode.
Oh, great.
I know, when Phil's coming back.
Yeah, Jerry. But
yes.
Yeah, there's a lot that kind of goes on here with, for some reason we have to have Keenan and Kel on to...
I don't get it.
I mean, it's for me, I think it's shameless promotion on ABC because they were really big on Disney at this point.
But Keenan and Kel was Nickelodeon, Phil.
Oh, well, were they owned by CBS? They're owned by CBS, aren't they?
No, see, the distribution is through CBS, but I think it was produced through ABC.
Okay.
So, the weird thing is, I assumed this was just, Melissa Joan Hart having been friends with Keenan and Kel when she was on Nickelodeon through Clarissa.
Oh.
And maybe it was just hop on my show, do a little thing. But it's there's 45 seconds where this is supposed to be an episode of Keenan and Kel. It's fucking weird.
I mean, it literally goes into, this whole thing.
I've Googled it. I've found no explanation for this. If you know it, let me know. But it's just weird because it's 45 seconds aside to this weird plot about Keenan winning the lottery.
Yeah, there's the whole ticket and then him eating the ticket. What the hell is going on over here?
Phil, let's talk about the judge here. Someone with quite the history of judging now.
Ah, Cover Girl.
That's right. RuPaul plays the judge here. I think he does great.
Yeah.
I think he's actually. He's fun to watch in this, but also his portrayal of a judge, or rather his the characterization of this judge, I love how it works with him perfectly because he's equal parts authoritative and just totally over Sabrina's bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't have a favorite. I love them both.
This is a court of law. This is not a greeting card company.
It's nice to just have someone in this universe that is that way.
Well, it's because everyone puts up with Sabrina and we're all tired of it.
That's right.
But yeah, and I'm with you. Also, I mean, if you look, he looks like he hasn't aged either since 1998.
He looks great, honestly. He in this scene, he looks 24 or something. I don't know how young he is, but he's not that young here.
Because
he started in 1982 or something.
What? Now you got me Googling this while I'm doing this.
RuPaul age 60. RuPaul is 60 now.
What?
So here he was 38, 37?
Yeah, 30-some. Dang. Yeah, he like you said, he looks like he's like 22.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing Revlon commercials when I was 5 years old in my mother's bedroom. You know, yes, it's Revlon. I mean, she would catch me with all this makeup on, and she'd say, "Is that makeup on your face, boy?" I said, "No, just a little tinted moisturizer, mascara. That's all."
We should all be so lucky.
God, 60? That's crazy.
He's 60 right now. RuPaul, who famously once told BuzzFeed a story about how he saw a boat capsize and instead of calling the police, prayed for the person.
What?
Yep. He did an interview. He was doing an interview with BuzzFeed, I think, and he was like, "Yeah, I used to live down in New York by the pier, and one time I saw a sailboat capsize, and I was going to run to call the police, and then I was like, what this person needs is my prayers, so I prayed instead." And then the best thing about that BuzzFeed article was like the next line was just like, "Paul did not continue to explain whether or not the person survived."
Oh my god. Oh my god, that's crazy.
It is literally one of the craziest things I've ever seen anyone admit to.
There was once a house on fire and I saw people screaming, so I sat there and prayed.
So I sprayed so I lit some sage to get the bad spirits out of the area.
I decided to meditate to hopefully calm them down.
Also, it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. You can do both.
I mean, yes, you can pick up the phone and pray.
And then pray after, you know, call first, pray after.
That's funny.
Jesus. But yeah, he's great in this episode. The montage, Phil.
Yeah. The montage kind of goes into this whole, like, I mean, again, this is what we were talking about before, where, like, Mr. Kraft is just, like, popping into every door for some reason.
Yep.
What did you think about the whole montage situation?
I think, like, some of the Hilda stuff, like, practically is fun to see, like Sabrina swinging through the slide part is fun. I think as a kid I would have loved that. It seems like the stuff she does with Zelda is pretty boring.
And I think that's what they were trying to go for, but yeah. but it was like the whole, like, Zelda ones, it seemed like they just used multiple of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. They're making fireworks and they have bigger fireworks.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, we're making, like, sparklers. It's like, okay. Like,
one, they're just sitting quietly and reading. The one thing I liked about that one was Salem is also reading and has little glasses on.
Ah. But I'm like, with the sparklers, I'm like, just go to the store and buy some. You don't have to, like, invent them. Like, honestly, you can go get them for a dollar. It's not that big of a deal.
It's like, there's a viral TikTok now of being like, oh, look, we spent several hundred dollars to build this plant garden, and now we've grown one vegetable that costs 40 cents.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did.
Yeah.
They should have just bought the eggplant at the store, metaphorically.
Because they're the freaking professionals who know how to grow an eggplant. Not you, dummy. They have to get $8,000 worth of supplies to make an eggplant.
That's right. When you start talking about building planters, you've gone too far.
But yeah, so like you said, the whole... you know, the Hilda stuff is more to, you know, when we were kids, it'd be like, this is amazing. Like, there's a Tarzan slide, yep, and there's a trampoline, and there's a slide here.
Honestly, can you imagine Sabrina's trying to read when she's on that trampoline. Can you imagine trying to read with, like, the sounds of, like, the springs of a trampoline in the background?
Nope, not happening.
Just like, ka-ting, ka-ting, ka-ting. I'm trying to read Pride and Prejudice.
Not happening.
I have written, why the fuck are Kenan and Kel here?
Yeah, why the fuck are Kenan and Kel here? That is, like, the biggest mystery of the whole fucking, like, episode.
Phil, do you agree with me, as I've written here as well, that grown-up Harvey seems like he's gonna suck?
Grown-up Harvey does seem like, you know, porno star slash, like, jackass businessman.
Harvey! Hey, grab some wheels out of the dining room. Let's go mountain biking up the stairs.
No thanks. I just wondered what happened to you.
Oh, that's right. We're supposed to get married, right?
I figured you forgot.
Bland voice, very dour, Burt Reynolds all across his face.
Yeah, but Burt Reynolds is, he's no Burt Reynolds. Like, Burt Reynolds is fucking cool. Like, this guy's a douchebag.
Sabrina was right to not marry him, in all honesty.
I mean, I wouldn't. I mean, definitely Chesler is definitely a Chesler marriage right there. But, I mean, he walks in and he's like, hello, this is Harvey.
Hello, Sabrina. I'm...
And he's like, asked where she's been for 3 years.
Yeah, couldn't have checked in sooner.
Hey, Jack. Yeah, exactly. Hey, Jackass, where have you been? Where have you been for 3 years?
Also, I'll tell you where you've been. Getting married and conceiving a baby.
Yeah, why would you decide today to show up? You've already, you've already married. You've already had a baby with her. I mean, shit.
Also, Miss, I do love the fact that in Sabrina's nightmarish future, Harvey and Libby are definitely raw dogging it.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, what else are you going to do?
Sure. Well, look, they're a married couple. They're both, you know.
You know, hey. That's what happens when you're married, you know.
Phil saying bragging.
But seriously, like, you know, that made no sense to me. It's like, you know, you've been missing for 3 years. So like, 3 years? Like, 3 years, why would you come back?
It's not like she's moved. She's still in the same townhouse.
she's all disheveled in the townhouse. Like, and then I like how she just, like, for 3 years, all of a sudden she finds this, like, his marriage certificate, like, right there. Like, oh, yep. Here it is. Like.
Yeah. See, what Harvey should have done was have her sign it in front of you. Just bring it to her. Don't send it to her. Like, you're not going to see your fiance. When you see her, you both sign it. This marriage was doomed from the beginning, Phil.
Why would you marry this slob? She's a slob.
I know, slobs are fun sometimes.
No, she's a slob. She's a slob, and she was a pain in the ass.
I like to think in reality, it was just when she saw Harvey starting to grow that mustache, she was like, oh, I got to find a way out of this.
But it was very porno stash at the, you know.
It was. Like, he looks like a former professional wrestler, Rick Rude. There'll be a comparison on the Instagram.
Al always goes straight for the Rick Rude reference.
I do. I love a good Rick Rude.
Oh, wait, hold on. Here's the Keenan. I'm trying to find this freaking... look at him. He looks like he's ready to sell you a freaking coffin at the funeral home.
A little bit. He does have a little Vincent Price to him.
He's like, hello. I mean, this guy's the worst.
I have it frozen on just him, like with a glum face staring dead ahead, and it's just like... He looks so dead inside.
He is dead inside.
Just thinking about Raw Dog and Libby. That's what he's doing there.
I mean...
Well, he could be thinking about worse things. Phil, the last thing I have written here for these grouping of scenes, I really like Martin Mull in this scene.
Do you?
Yeah, I've come to really enjoy him. Like, I don't like the typical, like, Martin Mull, oh, well, Sabrina's doing magic? What's that? Where'd she go? Oh, what? There's a chair here, and now there's no chair. I hate that shit. But but him actually, like, doing characters and stuff, he's always very funny. Like, I thought his delivery of, like, the whole, oh, thank you, yeah, I got these shoes last week. It's cheap, but it's funny, you know?
Thanks so much for letting me be a part of your experiment. Now, you be honest with me now. I'm in the placebo group, aren't I?
Not necessarily. You could be part of Group C. They're getting aging cream. Huh? But probably not. If you were, you'd have suffered some loss of hearing.
Oh, thank you very much. I just got these shoes.
Hey, well, see you next week. Hopefully.
That was good. Like, you're talking about, like, the whole, the anti-aging or the aging cream?
Yes, yes. That scene is good.
I agree with you on that. Yeah, because that's, he gets to be himself. He doesn't have to read these awful lines that they wrote for him. Like, oh, what are you doing? Come back here with that magic.
But the thing is, it's just like, it's so hard to make that curmudgeon-y character, like, uniquely funny because it's so repetitive, you know?
Yeah.
Like, season 3, he does actually get some, like, characterization and some development, and, like, you get to see more about him, which is nice. But, like, just having him go, oh, Sabrina, you know, I don't like you, and I think you're weird. Like, it gets tiring.
I know, it's so bad.
Do you have anything else to add here, Phil?
Yeah, what did you think about the judge and when they're doing the, when they're looking into the future? Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, we've gone digital. And then brings out his humongous screen.
He brings out the TV Chris dropped.
Literally, it's what it looked like.
Oh, yeah, we're quite modern. That's why we have this giant remote.
I was like, oh, okay, that's modern for you. Okay, sounds good.
We've gone digital. What a 1998 phrase.
We're in the digital age now.
That's right. We own Excel. We don't have to handwrite spreadsheets anymore.
That's right. We don't have to do the books anymore.
We've got QuickBooks. One.
Tax preparers? What are those? I use TurboTax.
I love TurboTax. They're great.
And who doesn't? And if they would put an ad here, that'd be amazing.
That would be real good. It'd be weird of them to do that in June. But get ahead of it, I always say.
Look, we'll take them anytime.
That's right. And there's no better time to buy a 2020 tax software than after you had to file, because it's super cheap right now. You can get it for like 90% off.
Yeah, use code Sabrina1.
That's right. Use code oops too late to get 90% off.
Oops-a-daisy.
Anyway, Phil, when asked who she finally wants to live with, Sabrina says, definitely not Keenan and Kel. Before the judge tells her he'll give her until tomorrow, but if she doesn't pick, he'll be forced to pick. And he's thinking... I almost said cemetery. He's not thinking cemetery. That's what Harvey's thinking. He's thinking cemetery. He's going to kill her. He's thinking orphanage.
I'll give you one more day, but that's it. If you haven't made a decision by then, I'll be forced to pick for you. And I'm thinking orphanage.
Sabrina talks to Salem about her problem and realizes that she can't decide between the two aunts, so she has to get them back together. He suggests making them share organs. Good plan. But Sabrina decides that the only course of action is to put someone that they love in danger. And lucky for Salem, she's talking about herself. Sabrina then comes down the stairs in Hilda's house, asking for help, as she's now basically bald, but like in a patchy way that is way worse than just being regular bald. When you get to this point, fellas, this is when you shave your head, cue ball, because this looks way worse. She looks like a radiation victim, is what I'm saying.
Well, the good news is no lice. The bad news, not even enough hair for a decent comb over.
Hilda is asked to stay the night at Zelda's place when Sabrina feels like she wants them both around. Zelda agrees to this, and the aunties go off to make her some chicken soup. Sabrina brags to Salem about how well the plan is going, although he says that he's sizing up their spleens just in case. Sabrina then hears from the other room that the linen closet door has been opened as someone has arrived, and the aunties have called a specialist.
Ooh.
Sabrina is scared that they've called the doctor, but we then smashed cut to that specialist being RuPaul playing a hairstylist, as he thinks Sabrina has a follicle problem. And as she's under a large black hair dryer that is quickly lifted, and it's revealed that she's now got a large pink beehive on her head.
Are we in the neighborhood?
No, it's horrible!
The stylist is not worried, as it can be fixed, that pink hair, but he does tell the aunties to turn up the stereo, and as he readies his high-powered curling iron, he says that the music helps to drown out the screams.
Stop! I can fix it myself!
Would restraints help?
It was a spell! I was just trying to get you guys back together because I don't like us not being a family anymore.
You did what?
Sabrina is so terrified that she comes clean and says that she just did this to get her aunties back together, and tries to prove that she's healthy by tap dancing for some reason, which makes the aunties break out laughing as they reveal it was all a setup. They say they've been doing all this to show her that they are better parents when they work together and they shouldn't be split up in any way, including by her scheming. Sabrina says that this can't be true, as the Witches' Council called her before them, and this is when hairstylist RuPaul reveals that it's also Judge RuPaul.
Olay.
Thank you. Delicious. My favorite phrase in Spanish. Olay. Sabrina wonders why he's leaving, as her hair is still the same way, and asks if they can change it. But Zelda just says that isn't she glad that she's now grounded. As the credits roll, Phil, Mr. Kraft comes back to bring to return a book to the aunties, or something like that. He comes into the house, is the point.
He comes back.
I'm going to read what I've written here. Mr. Kraft returns to bring his book to the aunties. I think it was Sabrina's book or something.
Yes.
Kind of funny, my grandmother's been wanting me to see someone.
Oh, well, I'm sure you'll meet someone nice when you least expect it.
No, this is see someone as in psychiatrist, although admittedly I have been seeing quite a few strange things here and there, mostly here.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Well, strange sparkly things and paper dissolving in staircase slides in a townhouse that looks identical to this Victorian home.
Zelda just says that he has a wonderful imagination as Sabrina walks in with her beehive, with Salem sporting a similar beehive on his little cat head. Mr. Kraft just leaves not wanting to have any more information as Salem just quietly says, "I'm not happy," as the episode closes.
I'm not happy.
Bill.
Yes, sir.
So the whole revelation about Sabrina pulling this little prank on them and then finding out that, in fact, the prank was on her.
Aha.
What do you think?
The tables have been turned. I think it's a life lesson that we all kind of learned in life that, you know, when you try to pit your parents against each other, you always come out in the losing end.
I actually kind of like the lesson in this episode where, like, it does feel, like, applicable to real-world life, but it's not so, like, saccharine and, like, oh, you should really learn to be your true self or whatever. It's just like, listen, when you try to play your parents against each other, it only ends up hurting you, and you don't want your parents to break up, so don't be a shithead.
Yeah, pretty much.
I did kind of enjoy that element of it. But like I said, let's be honest. Sabrina's horrified by her pink beehive or whatever. He's done the ward's work here. Like, you had no hair and like a few stringy patches, and now you've got a full head of albeit pink hair. Like,
I mean, you could always dye it.
It's a massive improvement. Like, she was bald a minute ago, and now she's got a pink Marge Simpson. It's great.
It kind of was a pink Marge Simpson, wasn't it?
Yeah, like that's way
like
better.
Like a purplishy, like, color.
Yeah, it was a little purpley. But, like, think about it this way, Phil. Before this episode, she couldn't have been the front woman for 90s dance band D-Light. But now she can sing Groove Is in the Heart.
There you go. That's
that
true.
Is a benefit to her life. Sabrina, you're welcome.
That's it. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I think that's it. That's it for the show, boys. No.
That's true. There is, I did promise that the Salem Says was coming up, Phil, and here it is for me.
Oh, no. No, I was actually just joking, Al, but go ahead. You continue, absolutely.
So Salem suggests that while he's not willing to put himself at risk, he will help Sabrina, saying that he can push her down the stairs.
Not you, me.
Oh, thank goodness. But I am willing to help. I could push you down the stairs.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to push Sabrina down the stairs?
It's true. Salem was making the best of a good opportunity.
I mean, that's going to teach her a life lesson.
Anything else you wanted to add here at the end, Phil?
So yeah, there is a line that kind of perplexed me for a bit. She gets her hair done and then she starts to tap dance. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And then she goes, you know, and then everyone starts laughing at her because of her tap dancing, and she goes, "Okay, so I'm no Ken Berry."
Okay, so I'm no Ken Berry.
So most people won't know who Ken Berry is.
Me included.
This age group. Me. So I know who Ken Berry is because of other things. But,
okay.
So do you know, you have no idea who Ken Berry is?
I did not before. I just now Googled him.
Okay, so Ken Berry is, he started off as a dancer, but he's best known for being the star of F Troop, being a star on Andy Griffith, Mayberry, RFD, and Mama's Family is probably what he's most known for, is Mama's Family.
I've seen some episodes of Mama's Family.
Yeah, exactly. But we got to remember, this is 1998. Okay, yes. Mama's Family ended in 1990.
Yeah, which is also kind of crazy.
Yeah, so it's like, why would you pick that person? There's so many more, like, dancers that you could have picked that have been more, like, applicable. Like, oh, I'm no Paula Abdul. Like, okay, cool. Like,
yes.
I know Paula Abdul is. Or, hey, I'm no, like, Britney Spears. Or I'm no
Janet Jackson.
Like, why would you go with Ken Berry? Like, why? Who wrote this? And why did you write it so terribly? Yeah, I'm like, and even like Ken Berry's even known for his dancing. Like, I'm sitting there looking like, I'm like, Ken Berry was a dancer? Like, I had to look that up. Like, I didn't even believe it. But yeah, it's true.
Who's a good dancer? The guy from White Christmas. I'm no Bing Crosby.
Yeah. I mean, even Bing Crosby would be a terrible one. Who's the one that did it with him? But yeah, like, at the end of the day, like, why would you pick those people?
It's pretty bad, Phil. I'm no like, Martha Graham. You could have said Martha Graham.
I mean, Danny Kaye would be the one I would have gone with. Because everyone knows Danny Kaye. Fred Astaire, Danny Kaye.
Gene
right?
Kelly. I'm no Gene Kelly.
There you go. Exactly. There you go. Gene Kelly. Everyone would have understood the line.
Patrick Swayze, even.
I mean, all great options. But why would you pick, like, Ken Berry out of all those options? It makes no sense to me.
I'll have you know, he once went to a dance in high school, so he's a dancer.
I mean, he once danced in a movie for 2 minutes, so he must be a dancer.
He once was in a barbershop, and there was a music playing on the radio, and he was tapping his foot, so that counts as dancing.
So he was also eligible for a barbershop quartet, because there was music, and he was in a barbershop.
Phil, that is the episode, but of course we have our closing ceremonies here on every episode of The Witch Trials, and we will do them here. Thank you. We will start with, let's start with the TGIF score, the This Good I Feel score, 1 to 5 score. Each number has a corresponding TGIF show. 1 to 5 is a You Wish, 2 out of 5 is a Teen Angel, 3 out of 5 a Hanging with Mr. Cooper, a 4 out of 5 is a Family Matters, and a 5 out of 5 is a Boy Meets World.
I'm probably going to go with a Hanging with Mr. Cooper, a 3 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a spectacular episode, but I think it was very relative to, you know, the age group that they were trying to go to or definitely trying to relate to. The message was kind of concise. The, you know, it didn't come out of something out of left field. Like we've, you know, the sisters have had this, like we kind of talked about before. Mm-hmm. They've had this, you know,
trouble brewing.
Yeah. They've had this adversarial, like trouble brewing for a while. Like it makes sense in the storyline. So yeah. I gave it a Hanging with Mr. Cooper 3 out of 5.
I would agree. I would say for me, it's like a higher Hanging with Mr. Cooper, but yeah, like, I think the end is kind of fun and wraps up together in a fun way, but like, it's a good story, but it's an average story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Phil, of course, there is the Back of the Linen Closet Award, our episodic award for each installment's biggest fashion flop. That is where we criticize one outfit more than all the others. Phil, what stuck out to you in this episode?
The one that kind of really stuck out to me and was like...
Harvey's mustache.
Harvey's mustache would have been, if it was an outfit, was definitely the one I would have thrown in the back.
Yeah.
But mine was the Quizmaster when he was at the house and he mm-hmm. was wearing that purplish like robe.
Dressing gown?
Yeah, it was like a purplish robe suit. Like
smoking jacket?
Yeah, like it was like terrible.
It was out of place on him.
Yeah. And I wrote here, looked like something out of Prince's Closet.
Hmm.
But yeah, that's what I went with. I went with the purple robe suit slash pajamas slash, you know, smoking jacket. But he was waiting to shave his legs, I guess, or something with.
Evidently, yeah. Him and Hilda sharing the same lady chic.
Hey.
It's funny you mentioned that scene because mine also comes from that scene looking at it now. But mine is Hilda's, like, house pants.
Yeah, those were pretty bad, too.
They're like black house pants with like white arrows and like green leaves on them or something. Like it's very like angular and like a lot of like shapes and pale colors. And I mean, they look comfortable, but they do not look good.
Yeah.
No thanks. Also, that Harvey shirt should thank those pants, because otherwise that Harvey shirt was going in the back of the linen closet.
I think one of mine was, like, my close second was going to be, like, when she's on the trampoline, she's got, like, these hideous pants on, too.
The same pants.
Yeah. Oh, it's the same pants?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That was definitely my close second, so, yep.
They're no good.
Nope.
And finally, Phil, here is where we will talk about our favorite, or just note, because we've probably already talked about it, our favorite Salem line of the episode. It's Salem Says. For me, it is that one about pushing her down the steps.
I had one here for you.
Is it the one by the basket?
Yes, the one with the basket. Yep. That was definitely the one where He, you know, she was talking about how horrible her life is. Like, oh, I have to sleep in a basket, so.
Oh, I feel sorry for you tonight when I'm sleeping in my wicker basket by those old paint cans.
It's a great line. But yeah, that's the episode, guys. Phil, thank you so much for stopping by. Always a distinct pleasure to talk Sabrina with you and talk about anything with you, honestly.
Ah, well, I'm always here to talk Sabrina or talk anything, so.
Always good to know. Phil, thank you. And fellas, ladies, and all the listeners out there, thank you so much for listening. We will be looking to get these out regularly, so hopefully, and if not, you know what, call me out, because sometimes you need your feet in the fire.
Yeah, call them out.
But until the next episode, I want to say thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Sabrina's Witch Trials on Instagram and Facebook, and at Sabrina Podcast on Twitter. You can listen to us everywhere, including, I believe we're now on iHeartRadio.
Yeah.
I think that's the new one I added.
Yeah, iHeartRadio. I saw that.
That's right. So check us out there. And if there's anywhere that you listen to the podcast and you can find us, let us know, and we'll be on there as quickly as we can be. So let us know that. And until next time, thank you for listening, and we will see you in the other realm.
You've seen both scenarios. What is your decision?
Well, I definitely don't want to live with Keenan and Kel.